on today's Compassion Radio.
I'm not sure you're ready to kick the bucket yet. If you are at your age, man, there's no hope for me.
Nearing home, well, who knows?
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio.
Celebrating our 74th year of ministry and adventure, this is the daily broadcast journal that highlights the triumphs of God in the world's most difficult places. This is Compassion Radio. Today, we're going to eavesdrop once again on a conversation that occurred between our own Norm Nelson and a good friend who he'll introduce in just a moment, who's really quite the historian of American Christianity. Our conversation centers around the ongoing life and legacy of the Reverend Billy Graham. Hope you can stick with us for the next 20-some-odd minutes. I think you'll be glad you did. Here's Norm.
All right, back for his second day is a very special guest and a dear friend of mine. Jim Lutzweiler is his name. He is a historian of American Christianity, and as I indicated yesterday, we became acquainted at a conference focusing on Billy Graham at the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton College in Illinois. Jim, it's wonderful to have you back for a second day.
Thank you, Norm. I love talking about Christian history, especially evangelical. Fundamentalist history. Fundamentalism has come into disrepute these days. It's a bad word almost. Some have made it an equivalent of radical or extremist, when in point of fact, a true fundamentalist is somebody who accents majors rather than minors. Everyone, after all is said and done, is a fundamentalist. The question is, what are the fundamentals?
That's right.
Those in the conservative Christian circles have defined certain fundamentals, and it's not a term that is synonymous with radical, terrorist, etc. It's a term that's synonymous with basics. What are the real things that we need to grapple with in life? And that's been the focus of my study in American Christianity.
Jim, let me ask you a question about that. And again, our focus is on Dr. Billy Graham, but Dr. Graham certainly comes out of this background. Tell us just briefly, if you will, Jim, about the fundamentals. Was that back in the 1920s when those publications, I think they were tracts of various kinds, weren't they? In which Christian leaders, they focused on the various fundamentals of Christian doctrine and Christian belief, which are necessary for people to really know the Lord and to know the church of which they are a part when they come to faith in Christ. Am I near the truth on that?
Well, absolutely. The term fundamentalism came into vogue more in the 1920s than earlier. There had always been fundamentalists. The synonym for fundamentalism back in the 1700s, 1800s was orthodox. And the fundamentalists became such in an effort, really, to come up with the irreducible minimum of what constituted Christianity. It was actually an attempt to unify the various Christian denominations, because the term began to have a broader meaning. Christianity began to have a broader meaning, and so some people got together and decided, well, what really is a Christian? The leader, the producer of those pamphlets, there were a dozen pamphlets put out called the Fundamentals. The guy who conceptualized that was from North Carolina. His name was Amzie Clarence Dixon. Mm-hmm. He was from Shelby, North Carolina. And he teamed up with an oil man out in your neck of the woods by the name of Lyman Stewart.
That's right.
And Lyman Stewart of the Union 76 Oil Company bankrolled Biola. He also bankrolled the production of 300,000 copies of these little booklets, The Fundamentals, and sent them out to Sunday school teachers, YMCA workers, pastors all over America. And eventually, this term, the fundamentals, fundamentalists, began to stick in the 1920s, and it was the movement that was encapsulated in those 12 pamphlets.
You know, for a movement to last and to have a lasting influence, it has to appeal to young people. I'm thinking about Dr. Billy Graham, and in reference to that, I'm thinking about the Youth for Christ movement, which certainly was and is an orthodox movement that emphasizes the fundamentals of the faith and so forth. Where does Youth for Christ fit into all of this? And in particular, what about its role in the formation of Dr. Billy Graham?
Well, the Youth for Christ movement was actually a successor to some degree of what was called the Student Volunteer Movement back in the late 1800s on the campus of Dwight L. Moody's Northfield Schools up in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Some folks got together and pondered how they could get the gospel to the entire world in one generation. And though they did not succeed at that task, they focused on young people. And in the 1920s, the 30s, and the early 40s, a new focus began on young people. Billy Graham became the first evangelist of the Youth for Christ movement, and that would have been in the mid-1940s. And I grew up in Dixon, Illinois, just down the road from Wheaton, Illinois, where Billy Graham had become a pastor at one time after he was the Youth for Christ leader. But Youth for Christ was strong in the state of Illinois, and I participated in every event that I could associated with Youth for Christ. I went to the movies that Billy Graham produced, Oil Town USA, Mr. Texas, yeah. Sang the songs that were featured in those movies. Billy Graham, George Beverly Shea were very strong presence in Illinois at that time, even though Billy lived in Montreat, North Carolina. The movement of Youth for Christ was just strong in the Midwest, and that's how he began to shape my life.
You know, Jim, other than her godly parents, my wife, Cher, probably would say that nothing in her life, in the formation of her commitment to Christ and growth in Christ, was more important than Youth for Christ. She was a very, very active participant, and she was very active in that as she was in the area around Grand Rapids, Michigan, where she was in secondary school, and she was very active in it. So I've seen the impact in our own family of the Youth for Christ movement, and of course she has always felt a very strong connection to Dr. Billy Graham, because as time went on, what was the fundamentalist movement and began with these pamphlets and so forth, began to multiply itself into all kinds of forms, as you mentioned, Christian movies and other sorts of things, certainly a Christian music industry and on and on. But Youth for Christ was right at the heart of all of that, wasn't it? And Billy Graham played a very significant role in all of that.
That he did. And another outgrowth of Youth for Christ, and paralleling it, was the establishment of Bible institutes and Bible colleges. Of course, Moody Bible Institute was the leader in that, and then Biola came along. But in the 1920s and 30s and 40s, other Bible institutes began to be formed, one of the most notable being in Dayton, Tennessee, where the Scopes trial had been held. And right after William Jennings Bryan died after that trial, they started Bryan College. Bob Jones University was started back in those days, and these schools were established basically to follow up on the youthful conversions. It's one thing to convert as a young person, but then to become grounded in the faith, what do you do? And so these Bible colleges and seminaries were established for the training of young people, and that's one of the schools that I went to.
Jim, I wonder if you remember, and I ask that rhetorically because I know that you do, you remember almost everything, the youth night at the Graham Crusades. Those were pretty amazing experiences, I know.
Indeed, and actually, I had never attended one of those youth nights at his revival because I didn't live in an area where he was conducting the revival. Well, I lived 100 miles down the road from Chicago. I went to his revival at McCormick Place in 1962, And it wasn't youth night that I was there. They bussed us in, so I was only there for one night, and it did not happen to be youth night. And I was at another revival in Minneapolis and one out in San Diego. And none of the three times that I was personally present to hear him was at a youth night. So I can't describe what it was like from having been present personally. However, the very fact that they existed shows that Billy Graham's focus has been on young people, and I think that's where our focus needs to be today to replace the existing generation. I'm about to kick the bucket at 67, and I'm glad our son's following in our footsteps, and we need to do something to continue to focus on young people.
I'm not sure you're ready to kick the bucket yet. If you are at your age, man, there's no hope for me.
Nearing home. Well, we're all nearing home at any given minute. I mean, none of us has a lease on life. Who knows? Comparatively speaking.
Friend, you are listening to a very special legacy edition of this Compassion Radio broadcast featuring the late Reverend Dr. Norm Nelson, who was the president and host of this ministry for so many years until his passing just about a year ago. We brought it back from the archives because we felt it would be very appropriate to air in this special anniversary month here at Compassion Radio. This coming March the 25th will mark our 74th year of broadcast ministry on radio, which means the day after that, we will kick off our 75th year on the air. Quite an accomplishment. Friend, thank you so much for listening and for your unwavering support of this Boots on the Ground ministry. Please do consider a special anniversary gift this month. It would bless us so much to hear from you. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Or you can reach us online and give right at our website, safe and secure, at CompassionRadio.com. We'll have a lot more to share towards the end of the broadcast, and we'll also pass along our mailing address at that time. In the meantime, let's get back to today's program.
You know, you and I are kind of up there in years a bit. At least let's say we are experienced people now. But I look at the ministry of Dr. Graham, and I think to myself, well, what is the legacy that he will leave? Look at this from the vantage point of an American historian, Jim. How would you answer that question?
Well, you know, the short answer I would give is history. One of the things Billy Graham does not get as much credit for that I think he deserves is the Billy Graham Center and Archives.
Mm.
That's why we were there.
Yeah.
Billy Graham has been a phenomenal conservator of the Christian legacy for the last 70, 80 years. That archive is rich in documenting Youth for Christ, his revivals, the people that he knew along the way, and I think that will be one of his greatest legacies, that people will be able to go back and study how Christianity has spread through the 20th century through documentation. Good papers make good friends, and he has left a phenomenal volume of papers. You can follow the trail of evangelism through the 20th century like no other movement in all of history.
There has always been, and I think this is something that the Lord has honored and certainly in his divine foreknowledge knew, and that is that he could trust Billy Graham. I think that there are so many people, let me just put it this way, there are so many men and women who have in their preaching decided for one reason or another that they are superior preachers to Billy Graham. I have actually been in places where that has been going on. There's a measure of jealousy. Certainly there was in earlier years when he was in his heyday and preaching in his crusades around the world, and also lecturing in many institutions of higher learning and confronting and enjoying the fellowship of young people asking questions, and he was giving answers from the scriptures to those questions. But you know what I think, Jim, in this regard, thinking in terms of his legacy and the impact he's had, I think of the organization that he built. Before Billy Graham came along, I don't think there was the kind of very effective utilization of consultants and bringing people into the organization and choosing them on the basis of their gifts and then employing them, turning them loose to exercise their gifts in the service of these crusades. And going to a major city and organizing one of these events, my goodness, that was an enormous responsibility, wasn't it?
Well, indeed it was. And actually, he did have a paradigm, a template for what he did, because they're told many people that Billy Graham is basically the second coming of Billy Sunday. Either that or Billy Sunday was the first coming of Billy Graham. Billy Sunday left behind, well, he functioned throughout his career with a marvelous organization. Whenever he left town, they formed Billy Sunday Clubs, and it was actually a Billy Sunday Club in Charlotte, North Carolina, that invited Mordecai Ham to come to that town to conduct a revival, and that was the revival during which Billy Graham himself hit the Sawdust Trail. So Billy Sunday, we of course never had it perfected as Billy Graham later did, because Billy tapped into the way that Billy Sunday did things and further developed it, honed it, and his organization today would dwarf Billy Sunday, but at least he got a jump start from the Billy Sunday organization, and a wonderful jump start it was, even from the standpoint that Billy Sunday had conducted revivals in Los Angeles before Billy had gotten there. There were probably people in that revival in 1949 who had been in Billy Sunday's revival in Los Angeles years earlier.
Yeah. You know, at that conference, Jim, where you and I met, once again, a conference focusing on the ministry and impact of the life and preaching and so forth of Dr. Billy Graham, I made a point in that meeting that a few disagreed with. I remember that. But what I said was this, that I felt that Billy Graham was a unifying force. Now, he had his critics, and I remember people that were almost rabid in their criticism of various aspects of Billy Graham's ministry and his approach to evangelism and so on and so forth. But I felt, and I have felt, since the time of that first crusade at which I was present in Los Angeles until now, that he had the impact of holding the evangelical community together. When the Graham organization came into a major city, it reached out to churches of various kinds, and as we noted yesterday, he integrated those crusades. So he had the effect, it seems to me, of pulling people together, getting them to work together for the furtherance of the gospel, and maybe lay aside some of the denominational and some of the theological points of argument that sometimes are so typical of us in the evangelical community. We all work together to see that the Lord was glorified and that the message of the gospel was communicated and took root in whatever city these crusades were held. I believe that he was a tremendous unifying force. Today, with a growing influence of politics within the evangelical world, it's my belief that we are becoming fractured. I'm wondering what you think about. I really miss the days when there was a far greater sense of unity among evangelicals than there is today.
Well, I think you're right in choosing that word unifier. And I grew up in part amongst those who began to criticize Billy Graham for his evangelistic methods. And for a time, I sided with them until I looked at the historical record. History has a way of staring you in the face, and you can't get past it. It's like a speed bump on a road sometimes. You can't get to your next destination. Mm-hmm. When I began to study the ministries of Billy Sunday and Dwight L. Moody, I discovered that they had cooperative evangelism just like Billy Graham. Mm-hmm. So that those who were criticizing him for the way he reached out and incorporated others into his meetings were not speaking from an historical standpoint. They were speaking more from a denominational or a sectarian standpoint, because he did walk in the tradition of Moody and Sunday, contrary to the protestations of his critics, who invoked Billy Sunday and Dwight L. Moody as never trying to do such things. And the fact is, they simply didn't know the historical record. I've made a garden industry of chasing down the newspaper clippings of the coverage of Billy Sunday's revivals, Dwight L. Moody's revivals, and it's quite apparent that Billy Sunday is the second coming of both of those people, whereas his critics have not practiced the methods of Moody and of Sunday. So Billy is more in their tradition, and they were certainly unifiers. They brought together all kinds of denominations.
You know, Jim, I have really enjoyed your presence with us and your friendship. We just treasure it. I'd like to ask you for a kind of summing up. I'm wondering, what would you say then about the ministry of Billy Graham? What is he leaving behind for which we can thank God?
I think he's leaving behind a clear statement of the gospel in both propositional form and in musical form. He's left behind a wonderful legacy of music that carries forth the gospel in lyrical and tonal forms, and I think that will be a wonderful legacy for the future.
And of course, our dear friend Cliff Barrows had a massive role in that direction.
And he did.
And Dr. Graham had the wisdom to choose that fabulous guy. We knew him as a young man, and he was definitely my hero when he and his wife and little girl stayed in our home here in the L.A. area. That's a story for another day, Jim. But thanks so much. Jim Lutzweiler has been with us, historian of American Christianity and a proud resident of North Carolina. I have to agree with you, Jim, about those wonderful guys. Thanks so much for being with us, and we look forward to the next time when we can have you as a guest on Compassion Radio.
Thank you, Norm. A real pleasure.
And that's a wrap on this classic broadcast featuring my dear colleague, Dr. Norm Nelson. We thought it was appropriate today to dip back into our vast program archives for that gem. Such great memories for me. Friend, we are literally just days away from celebrating our 74th anniversary here at Compassion Radio. We certainly do thank the Lord for you, especially those who support this ministry have again proven themselves faithful. It's a wonderful thing, for it's not only an act of faith in supporting this ministry, but we here live by faith. We don't know what kind of resources are going to come in month to month. We have no way to orchestrate that. We really are, at the discretion of God and the Holy Spirit, prompting the hearts of people and their faithful response. This isn't a business. This is a ministry. And frankly, we are at the discretion of God. If the Lord chooses to bring more, we have more. If He chooses, for whatever reason, to bring in less, we have less. But it seems in the end, God has continually laid upon the hearts of faithful people what we need. This generous, gracious giving does not go unnoticed. To that end, here's one last important word from Bram Floria.
Hi, friends. I'm in Cairo, Egypt, as I record this. Why Egypt? Well, like we often do, we travel as guests of our partner ministries, so we can bring you the most current and powerful stories of God's hand at work. I covet your prayers as I spend the next few weeks traveling through the Middle East and North Africa. As with anything important and worth doing, there's always some spiritual kickback. And as I'm recording this, the devil's really hitting us in the pocketbook. Right now, listener support for this unique radio ministry is at an all-time low. Frankly, if we're to continue, we need to see a serious rebound in giving, and we need to see it soon. Now, what will your gift do? Well, far more than just keeping us on the air. Our partners have enabled us to provide hundreds of thousands of Bibles to new believers in China and other booming Christian nations. Together, we provided relief and desperately needed supplies to refugees from dozens of world conflicts and natural disasters. And coming up this year, we'll award the very first Norm Nelson Religious Freedom, Faith, and Dignity Award to honor and empower the work of courageous believers around the world. And your gifts make it possible for us to go find all the stories and transformational interviews you hear every day on this station. Friends, we need your support, and we need it now. can I count on you to contact us today to let us know that you're standing with us? Jimmy has some info on the unique and special thank you this month for your gift of support.
For your gift this month, we'd love to send you the first part of a new companion study to an upcoming series on the Book of Ecclesiastes. It's available in PDF format by email or printed and mailed. The full study will be available this spring. Ask for your Section 1 today by calling 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail, contact us at Compassion Radio, Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And, of course, you can find us online safe and secure at CompassionRadio.com. That phone number once more, 1-800-868-2478. I'm Jim Governale. On behalf of Bram, Cher, and the entire Compassion Radio team, have a wonderful day in the Lord. And we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.